Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 15, text number 5. Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha dhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvanvarve moka sukadika sangar gachantnya muda padam avyam tat. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, and who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Shukra's purport. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking one's himself the lord of material nature, it is very difficult for him to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know by cultivation of real knowledge that he is not the Lord of the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is free from delusions caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion, for although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and then goes away, he has a foolish notion that he is the lord of the world. He thus makes things all things complicated, and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, this earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. When one is free from such a false notion, he becomes free from all false association caused by familial, social, and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what actually is not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions, such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes full of knowledge, then it's possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The verse again is Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvanvarve moka sukatuka sangar gachatnya mudam padam avyam tat. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are free from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyatya De Satarane. Here in this verse is an explanation of how to get free from all our problems. Of course, generally we don't know what our real problems are. We think our problems are that it's not warm enough in the summer, we can't go to the beach, or I don't have enough money in my bank account, so I can't go to the movies. We think that these are the problems of life. But the actual problem of life is a little bit more serious than that. The actual problem of life is that we're very shortly going to quit this body, and we don't know where we're going. That's quite a problem. And it's not that I'm some unfortunate persons who are victims of tidal waves. They'll have to leave their body, but we'll be here forever reading about it in the newspaper. The fact is that whether we get hit by a tidal wave or old age or we walk across the street and one automobile runs us over, it is more or less we wind up in the same position, out of the body. But here, before we leave the body, we should find out who we are. If we're this body, then after leaving the body, there's no one to leave the body, because we are the body. When the body's dead, then we just disappear. Or is there something else within the body, ourselves, who make the body appear to be alive, but when we leave the body, then it appears to be dead? Krishna addresses that in the Bhagavad Gita when he says, Deno sunyata dehe kamaram yovanam jara tata dahantra praptir viryas tatra namuyati. He tells Arjuna, and when he's speaking to Arjuna, he's not speaking as a Hindu god to a Hindu, Arjuna, talking about Hindu religion. Because 5,000 years ago, there was no such thing as Hinduism, nor was there such a thing as a Hindu religion. But Krishna is explaining to Arjuna a science of understanding ourselves. It's a science because it pertains to everyone for all time, including all of us who are currently sitting here. Although Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, what he spoke is equally applicable now as it will be 5 million years from now. For instance, here Krishna is saying that our bodies are changing, or that Arjuna's body was changing. So also our bodies are changing. It wasn't that poor Arjuna 5,000 years ago, he was an unfortunate person because he had a changing body. And then Krishna told Arjuna the inevitable, because your body is changing, you'll have to leave your body eventually, but don't worry, because you're my friend, I'll give you another body. And now 5,000 years later, because somehow or another we don't believe in Krishna, therefore when we leave this body, he may not give us another one. 5,000 years ago, Arjuna had a body that was changing. But Krishna tells Arjuna that you within the body, who are aware of the body, you don't change. That's why you're able to remember so many different bodies you've had. Baby bodies, boyhood bodies, youthful bodies, and now your present body. Similarly, we can also remember, if we think enough about it, our smaller bodies that we went through, our present body. And we can expect that if we stay in this present body, we'll have other remembrances of this body. We ourselves within the body, we're not changing. But here it explains why we're bewildered into identifying with the body. If we're not the body, and we're not the doer, then actually we're not Americans, we're not Australians or Indians, we're none of these things because we're not the body. Just like if one is identifying himself with someone he's not, that's considered to be madness. If someone declares that I'm Napoleon, I've come here to conquer Australia, but I figure it's not worth it, so I'm going back to France. I'll give you back Australia. That no one would really take him seriously. Usually they call up the people with the white coats to take him away. Because somehow or another, he or she is misidentifying themselves with someone that they're actually not. Similarly, if we are actually changing, we're in a changing body, and we're not changing, that means that we're not the body, and that we're misidentifying ourselves with something that we're not. That means we're in the same category as someone who thinks they're Napoleon. It's just that we don't make such big claims. We think we're so-and-so and we just live on Albert Park Road somewhere. So no one will make a big deal out of it. But we're also on the same level of being crazy as the person who declares himself to be Napoleon when he's actually not. So what? And along with declaring ourselves to be Napoleon or June Frank, living on some avenue here in Melbourne, is that we have so much pride. I may be nothing, but my country is everything. And even if my country's not anything, still it's a nice place. I love my country. We have the best football team in the world, or cricket. We have frogs and crickets and everything else here. Besides that, every country is thinking I have something special. If nothing else, we have the most venomous rattlesnake. They take pride in it. Everywhere you go, they have something to be proud of that makes them special. We won the basket weaving championship in the world. So we're actually the best. But one who's actually aware of the fact that we're not the body, then no one is their body. Therefore, this idea that we're Australians or Americans or Russians or Germans or Indians, it is all a mental concoction. Just like if someone is wearing a green shirt or a red shirt or a pink shirt, no one walks around thinking, I'm a good person because I have a green shirt on. Or I'm a bad person because I have a red shirt on. One realizes I'm not the shirt, the shirt's not changing me, that I'm something different from the shirt, so what does it matter what the color of my shirt is? That actually I'm the soul within the body. Therefore, whatever the body is, it doesn't really affect me. This sense of false pride that we're something special because we belong to some great organization or great religion or great nationality. Actually, we're always the same. According to Bhagavad Gita, Klesha, oh, what is it? Satyatam, that the living entity is Shukshma. He's 1/10,000th the size of tip of hair in size. Maybe someone's 2/10,000th size of tip of hair in size. They've gotten twice as big by their spiritual advancement. But after all, even if we were 2/10,000th the size of tip of hair in size, it would not be very big. Nirmana, moha, and this misidentification with this body, this misidentification with our so-called pride and being something very important is all due to illusion. Although we're by nature full of bliss, full of knowledge, and we have another activity, just like here in the material world, everyone's talking about happiness, everyone's talking about love, everyone's talking about the means of obtaining happiness and love. And everyone, for the most part, of course, sometimes it appears Romeo meets Juliet and appears that this is going to be the unique romance and it's going to be written in the storybooks. It went on forever. But as we know when we read the newspapers, even Romeo and Juliet have a hard time nowadays. Even their relationship doesn't last very long. Because although we're looking for Romeo or Juliet in this world, Romeo is not a material body, nor can Juliet be a material body, because these bodies are not the reservoir of all pleasure. Although due to illusion and attachment, we love our bodies very dearly, and we want other people to also love and worship our bodies, because we think they're very special, and we want to share the good news and the good feelings with everyone. But because we're not the body, and the body is ultimately not worshipable, nor can it give us the pleasure we're looking for. Therefore, everyone who's more or less a body worshiper winds up disappointed. No matter how much worship we give our body, we feed it our daily vitamin pill, do our little exercise every day, wash it and feed it regularly, cleanse it, do abhishek. Still, it winds up getting old on us. And every day it becomes a little less worshipable. We look at it in the mirror and wonder, why am I worshipping this deity anyhow? And then finally, it kicks us out. Just imagine working for someone your whole life, and at the end, instead of giving you a pension or giving you some comfort or some vacation, it throws you out, kicks you out of the job and says, forget it, kid, you're out. Not even a gold watch. We can't take anything. We just get thrown out of the body, and again, we got to start a new employment agency. Start all fresh. Brand new little baby body. And the only, although we were a big PhD in our last lifetime, everyone was giving us respect. We were a professor at the biggest university. Everyone was looking for our wisdom. And now we got our new baby body. And the most profound thing we can say is, goo, 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 goo. We start all over again. We were a big mathematics professor writing all kinds of equations that only we could understand, and now we're trying to figure out what 1 plus 1 would is equal to. And we think it was progress, and we were proud of our achievements. And now we can't even pronounce what our name was in our last lifetime. So this is due to our trying to become something that we can't be, namely the controllers and lords of material nature. So according to the Bhagavad Gita, there is an ultimate controller and there is a law, laws behind material nature. We're not the controller of this material nature, nor do we make the laws. We're living underneath them. Therefore, there's no need to be proud. Prisoners, they may be in a very nice prison cell, or maybe in a very not so nice prison cell, but after all, they're in a prison cell. So if one prisoner won't talk to the other prisoners because he thinks, my prison cell is the best. How dare you speak to me? Do you know who I am? Yes, we know who you are. You're a fool like we are. You're in prison. So anyone who's come to the material world and has taken a material body and is very sincerely, diligently, loyally, lovingly, feelingly, enthusiastically serving his dead material body is a fool. If he has no higher objective in life other than to serve this body until it kicks us out and throws us into another body. Instead, we should find out what the purpose of our being in this body is, why we've come here, and what the solution to our problems are. Bhagavad Gita mentions the real problems are janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, and udarshana. Birth, death, old age, and disease. All of us are aware of birth, death, but we may not think that we're going to take birth again. Although actually we never really took birth because we entered into a body that took birth, but we didn't take birth along with the body. We just appeared to be born. And as far as old age, we all have experienced that our body is growing older. I don't think anyone wakes up in the morning, looks in the mirror and discovers that your body is younger. And disease, everyone feels disease. Just like we look around sitting here, everyone's struggling just to keep their body straight. Keep the knees on the floor. Everyone feels lack of ease because maybe our stomach hurts because we're waiting for the lecture to be over so we can eat. Or maybe we ate before the lecture and now we ate too much. Or maybe our head hurts from hearing the lecture. There are so many different diseases. The legs hurt, the spine hurts, the belly hurts, everything hurts. But we think, well, I'm having a good time. And as far as death, no one looks forward to death, to leaving the body. Because everyone sings happy birthday, although it wasn't very happy. Because as soon as you were born, the first thing they did is they smacked you to get you to cry. So what was happy about birth? And death is not a very happy experience. No one sings, happy death day to you, happy death day to you. No one thinks that death is going to be a wonderful experience because we don't know what. First of all, there may be so much discomfort due to the derangement of the body. And even more than that, we don't know where we're going. If someone came in with a machine gun and said, leave the room, I'm taking you somewhere. We think, wow, I don't want to go with him. Who knows where he's taking me? So certainly the body kicks us out and we wonder, where am I going next? That is our problems. Because we take birth again and then we got to go through the same process again and again and again. We may think, well, it's not so bad because I was born in Australia. The surf is good, and the food's good, the people are good, the weather is good, everything's good, it's good. Why complain? But after leaving this body, there's no guarantee that we're going to take birth in Australia. And even if we take birth in Australia, there's no guarantee we'll take birth as a human being in Australia. Maybe we like Australia very much, we become attached to it, and we become one of the green frogs in Australia. So that will not be very encouraging. Still, the weather will be good, the food will be good, but we won't be good. So Krishna says, better we get free from this false identification of this body, this false identification as being of a certain nationality or religion or a certain masculine or feminine. Instead, we should understand who we actually are, that now we're servants of the material nature, and the material nature works under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when we get free from these false associations, then we can give up this desire to utilize material nature in order to so-called make ourselves happy. Actually, we don't make ourselves happy by serving the material nature. We simply very temporarily free ourselves from the anxiety to make ourselves happy. But then as soon as we get what we want, what the senses are demanding from us, we satisfy them. It is not that they retire and say, thank you very much, you did a good job. Now you don't have any more desires and you can retire and be peaceful forever. No, but as soon as we serve the senses, they immediately say, you rascal, you're not doing a good enough job. I feel twice as hungry now. And besides that, look at your neighbor over there. They're doing a much better job than you are serving their bodies. Why don't you wake up and do something practical for me? You don't love me, that's the problem. In other words, as soon as we become attached to serving the bodily senses, then there's no end to the service, and nor do the senses ever appreciate our service and let us take a break. No one wakes up in the morning thinking, well, today's a vacation, I don't have to eat anymore, I don't have to sleep, I don't have to worry about any kind of doing anything for the body today. Today I'll take a vacation. No, the body never gives up. Even when we're sleeping, it's telling us things to do, to dream about. Therefore, Krishna advises that instead of trying to serve the body endlessly, without any break, without any appreciation from the body, then instead of that, we should use that same body and try to engage it in Krishna's service. Because Krishna will appreciate our service. And instead of simply getting old age, disease, and death as our reward, we can actually get Krishna as our reward. We can get our loving relation with Krishna if we learn the science of devotional service, how to utilize the same body that we have now in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is what the body is actually meant for. Now, whatever we do, whatever we think, whatever we say, under the laws of karma, we must get a result for it. Maybe good, maybe bad, or maybe mixed. But after all, whatever we get will simply mean another body. But if we utilize that same body, the same mind, the same words and intelligence in the service of the proprietor of this universe, then he won't give us another material body. He'll bring us back to the spiritual world where we can live forever in our real activity of loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that service is ever more encouraging and enlightening. Here, no one knows what their destination is. No one knows how to actually become happy. No one knows how to avoid the problems of life. But in the spiritual world, there are no problems. There's only happiness. And one's awareness of how to become happier and happier grows with every moment. Therefore, we have a choice, at least now in the human form of life. The choice is not whether we want this suntan lotion or that suntan lotion. That's not the ultimate choice in life. The ultimate choice in life is whether we want to realize ourselves as spiritual beings or we want to remain in this material world in any one of the 8,400,000 species of life and work hard for nothing, for no real ultimate advancement in life. So, of course, in this age, everyone's quite misdirected. The newspapers don't give lectures like this. The television doesn't. If you talk like this in school, they'll throw you out. So, we're not being well educated in the Vedic sense of the term. We're not being properly directed. Therefore, it's very difficult to understand this philosophy because it's too simple. And besides that, its implications seem to necessitate a rather big change in my life. But actually, Krishna says you don't have to make a radical change in your life all at once. You can simply begin this process by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And see if it doesn't make you more enlightened and happy. It doesn't cost anything. We're not telling people to shave their heads or put on some robes. That's not the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. We're not introducing, of course we introduced the shaven head concept, and now a lot of people have it. And as far as putting on robes, it's not necessary. Although it's cheaper actually, it's much, save a lot of money. And it's always in style, at least spiritually it is. But that's not our main purpose of the Hare Krishna movement, is to introduce a shaven head and robes. But the purpose is to introduce a higher state of consciousness, and everyone's invited to try the chanting of Hare Krishna and to take some of these books and read them and find out how to practice Krishna consciousness in your home. You don't have to give up your job. You don't have to give up your family. You don't have to give up your dress. You don't have to change your address. Just chanting Hare Krishna, understanding the philosophy and applying it will mean that one will be able to experience for themselves directly a different state of awareness beyond the ordinary. So I think I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? So I think now we have our Sunday feast. Is that right? It's upstairs? So thank you for your kind attention. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.